Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, hello there, my friend. How are you doing today? I hope you're doing better than what we're experiencing right now in Baltimore. Wow! It just seemed to have come all of a sudden. If you can hear the lightning and thunder. Wait a minute. You're going to be able to hear the thunder. You can't hear the lightning. But you know what I mean, right? Oh, my God. And I'm not even a real blonde. I can't even fake it. Oh, I really do hope you're doing well. And here's what the agenda is supposed to be like today. I understand that Slim Man has had a little trouble with this signal. I'm going to get a hold of him. He is supposed to be driving on his way to the area from Nashville, so this is going to be a trip anyway. We've got a whole bunch of music for you regardless, and I know that we'll hear from him at some point. Not to worry. This is why I always do the Plan B in conjunction with Plan A. So we'll get on the horn to him and find out what's going on, and we'll tell you about who's coming up in the way of who to see, like EC tomorrow night in D.C. Slim Man's going to be at Ram's Head on Saturday. Our good friend Cindy Bradley is going to be at Blues Alley on the 15th. There's a whole lot to celebrate, including the classics. Dexter Gordon has one for you from the 60s. This is Love for Sale on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. a way to start the show. Billy Higgins on drums, Butch Warren on bass, Sonny Clark on piano, and the amazing Dexter Gordon on that saxophone. Holy cow, it's good to hear Dexter Gordon when the rain is coming down. And here's something, you know what, it has everything to do with our guest who's hanging on the line here. So funny. I certainly knew that Maxine Gordon had been taking care of Dexter's estate and making sure that DexterGordon.com was in full modus operandi. But I didn't know that her son, Woody Shaw III, was so involved with his stepdad's endeavors. And I just found out this morning, I love this, has everything to do with Slim Man, who you're about to hear. Maxine's son, his full name is Woody Louis Armstrong Shaw III. And I say that because one of the first things I think of when I think of my friend Slim Man is the fact that when he was 5 years old, his whole little world changed. He saw the five pennies with Danny Kaye and Louis Armstrong, and he pointed to his dad and said, I want to be just like that when I grow up. And things really haven't changed since then. He is an amazing vocalist, a life-changing vocalist, if you will, a producer, a songwriter, a bon vivant, a poster child for Kickstarter.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please, Slim Man.
Hey, Trish.
How are you, honey? Are you on the road?
I am in Knoxville, Tennessee, driving through the hills of that lovely state of Tennessee.
Oh, wow. Well, look, I must tell you that as you get closer to your home state of Maryland, we got some bad arse thunderstorms happening right now, so get ready.
Well, you know, the sun always shines on Slim Man, so I'm not worried.
I know that's true, and I know that you are psyched. First of all, congratulations on the wonderful Kickstarter program, because that thing just kicked into gear early on, didn't it?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those things. I came up with a decision to do it, and, you know, 30 days later, I had a CD that was fully funded, and you know, went and got it mastered, and did it all, and it's done. Like, you know, 60 days later, I got copies in my hand. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. 30 days. Now, what is the usual time frame if you're going to implement Kickstarter? Is it like you can call whatever time frame you want, or what?
They suggest 30 days. That's what they want you to do. They want to give you 30 days to raise the funds for your creative project. If people aren't familiar with Kickstarter, it's a platform where creative people go to get funding for their projects, movies, documentaries, TV shows, CDs, that kind of stuff. And we have 30 days to raise our funding, and we doubled it. So
that is amazing. Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
And Slim, were you surprised at who came forward to donate to this project? Was it the standbys that you've come to know, good friends along the way, or were there some folks that you were so shocked to see?
It was a combination of people that I'd never heard before and people that I were familiar with, the people that like the Slim Man music.
Yeah.
It was a combination of the two of those. I guess people that who like Kickstarter try to find projects that they believe in, and they will, donate money, or, you know, big pledges is what they call it. And so it was a combination of the two, unknowns and the knowns.
That's really wonderful. And what kind of probably a lot has to do, one would think, with what you were offering in the way of how much people would donate. Did you have some delicious prizes for people who contributed a lot?
Yeah, you know, it was, the pledges were anywhere from $10 to $1,500. And for $10, you get a digital download of the full CD plus the bonus track from the new Slim Man Studios CD, which is going to be out next year. And for like $1,500, I come to your house and cook dinner for 8 people and do a little mini concert.
I love that. You cook dinner and you perform?
Yes, I will cook and I will perform. And I had I had two pledges available, and they were both taken.
And they're both women.
Yes, they are. One is one is going to be in Cape Cod in the summer. She's got this compound, an estate or whatever it is, and she's got a guest house, and she wants me to cook for her friends and do a little mini concert. And then the other one's in Illinois somewhere. Oh, excuse me, Indiana.
Wow. See, I knew that they were going to be women because, as anyone with any sense knows, the ladies are drawn to the slim man.
Well, they're both, I know that they're both married because they're doing this for one is doing it for her husband for his birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
And, so the pledges range from $10 to $1,500. And like for $50, you get a copy of the CD autographed and the digital download. Plus, I'll sing happy birthday to anyone that you want within the next year. So that was a lot of fun. So I've got like a whole bunch of pledges. So I've got my little iCalendar on my computer all set up for, you know, on April 16th, I have to, you know, call and sing a happy birthday to this person and that person and another person.
Oh, that's really a wonderful idea. And look how well this turned out. I'm just tickled. And Slim Man Live is in my hot hands. Thank you for sending it to me. I was immersed in, as Griselda and I call you, pudding music in the past few days. So
yeah,
we have this afternoon a pudding mix, if you will, of songs. Songs that have been inspired by you or other folks that are being actually available in the area. Our good friend E.C. Coleman is coming from Las Vegas to be in D.C.
Cool.
Tomorrow.
Cool.
Yep. And Cindy Bradley, my good friend, is going to be at Blues Alley next week. So I'm going to play a mix of music and throw in some surprises, especially for you, the puddin'.
I have no idea what pudding is, Trish, but I'll just take your word for it. But I hope it's good stuff.
No, it is. It's a little term of affection, and now the cat's out of the bag. This is what Griselda and I call you. So it's a hybrid pudding mix today. And I know that you're driving, so I wanted this to be a relaxing experience for you, whereby you have a little break. I'm going to play a two-song set right now, and in that two-song set will be a song from Slim Man Live. I'm excited.
Yeah, it was really great to put together the CD a couple of years ago. We were getting ready to do a show in Northern California, and they were playing some music on the sound system while we were doing our setup and sound check, and I recognized it was a concert we had done the year before with Mark Antoine on guitar, and I went up to the sound guy. I said, "Wow, it sounds really good." He said, "Yeah, I've got the whole show recorded," and it turns out that the guy has been doing recordings of almost all of our Northern California shows since 1997.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, so I asked him if he had any more. He said, yeah, he's got a whole stack. So he sent me a stack of CDs. When I say a stack, there was at least, there was more than a dozen. More than a dozen CDs.
God bless
and
him.
So, yeah, and, I mean, just tons and tons of shows. And it was a good 12, 14 hours worth of music. And I'm sitting there looking at the stack for months and months going, how am I ever going to listen to that? I mean, you know, I love Frank Sinatra, but I don't know if I can listen to him for 12 hours in a row. But I was going, you know, back in May, my niece Carly was getting married, and I was driving from Baltimore to Nashville, and I figured, you know, it's about 11 hours. I might as well take the CDs, and I listened to every one, and I took notes. And there was some really, really great, exciting stuff. I mean, as I was driving, I'm listening, and also I'm calling up the sax player, like, listen to this. I'm calling up the piano player, listen to this. There was just some really, really cool stuff, and I was like, there's more. I mean, there was more than enough. The only problem I had was what songs I wasn't going to use on this.
Yeah,
live CD.
Right. I can imagine that because, you know, for those of us who have seen you in concert, honestly, Slim, it's like listening to you live. I mean, that sounds ridiculous because it's Slim Man Live, but a lot of these endeavors don't really sound like the real thing. You just sound like you're right there. And it's so – I was laughing about this because I have no idea what you're going to tell me, but I'm looking at the cover for Slim Man 1,000 Miles Away, your last CD, and on the back, the last song, which is, of course, as you know, is one of my favorites for Now and Forever Live, you have – in parentheses underneath, from the upcoming Slim Man Live CD. Did you actually know at that time that there was going to be a CD?
No. No. I didn't. It was just one of those songs that I had listened to. He had sent me like a sample. He's like, listen to this, and you'll get an idea of what the rest of the songs sound like. So he sent me that song, and I'm like, I don't care what the rest of them sound like. This sounds great. Let's put it on this as a, you know, from the upcoming live CD. And if we ever do have one, we got a fresh start. But no, I did not have any idea that I was going to do a live CD when I put that on the 1,000 Miles Away CD.
How well do I know you?
Yeah, you know. You know. Just fly by the seat of my pants over here.
I love it. Well, I'm going to give you a little break, and we're going to play a couple of songs, and I want people to get a taste, because if I have my druthers here, I'm going to play at least four from the CD, if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
Okay, because as far as we're concerned, this is a CD release party on the radio.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, it's going to be the worldwide debut.
That's right. And you've already had a CD release party in the physical sense, and you're going to have another one at Ram's Head in Annapolis on Saturday, which is why you're here today. But shoot, let's give people a little sneak preview, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, I love that. Do you have Batu with you, by the way?
Batu is in the back of the car. He sleeps. I'm telling you, he is a prince. Batu is my dog. He's a bull terrier from South America, and he travels with me just about everywhere I go. And he drives in the car. I mean, hours and hours and hours, not a beep, not a nothing. He's just back there just chilling.
Well, you know what? Would you please give him a message? I went to his fan page on Facebook, and I said to him, could you please tell Dad to be on time for the show today? And apparently he did that. So
yes,
a big
he did.
Thanks. All right, that's great. God bless him.
Yes.
Well, we're going to dive into Cindy Bradley first. This is a cool song that I thought would go well with a Slim Man song, which you'll hear next. So enjoy the ride. Glad Batu is with you. And our special guest today is Slim Man on Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. at the letter U, full of twists and turns of fate. Looking back on every step, it had to be this way. If either you or I chose a different road, or looked the other way at any point in time, this love would never be. And just because in the past we've never had a love that seemed to last. The reason why is clear to me, and that this love right now was meant to be.
In the chat room that was so hot. First we heard Cindy Bradley, Inevitable, and then we heard Slim Man, Meant to Be. How sexy was that, Slim?
Well, I don't know about all that. It sounded pretty good, though.
No, it was really sexy. We're just enjoying it so much. As you suspect, in the chat room, there is a lively crowd, and your cheerleader, Griselda Medina, is leading the pack here. So she is a great PR person for you, as you know.
Yes, she is. Wonderful gal.
I know she is. And we love that song, Meant to Be. Woo!
Thank you.
So glad you picked that for the CD.
Thank you.
Wow. And let's just get this out of the way so folks can know about Slim Man Live. This is the new CD. So what you did was you got from when to when as far as time frames for these live songs. Can you tell me?
From 1997 to 2007. That was probably grab that 10-year period.
Wow, you did.
Yeah. Some of the songs were recorded in 1997 with a gal named Rita Thies on sax, Rita T. And
she was great.
Yeah, she's a great saxophone player. Her husband co-produced all the Kenny G, Mariah Carey, all that stuff with Walter Afanasieff. And she's a great talent. And a lot of the stuff with her on it was recorded in 97 and 98 and 99. And then it goes all the way up to 2007 concert we did with Marc Antoine. So yeah,
oh
it's a 10-year span.
That and it sounds completely so fresh and so invigorated. My God, that guy who recorded all of this for so long did a great job. I know you were blown away when you heard that.
Yeah, he does bands like Yes and Toto. I mean, he's the go-to guy for a lot of people that the sound really makes a difference. And when we come into town or we go to Northern California, he just puts everything on hold and comes out and does our shows. And a guy named Paul Doty and his wife, Leslie, they have recorded every Slim Man show. And I mean, they've got a warehouse full of gear with just, I mean, it's beautiful, incredible microphones and preamps and all the high-end stuff that bands like Toto and Yes use when they do their stuff. And he comes out and records us. And the live CD is a combination of songs from all Slim Man's from, like I said, 97 to 2007. It's got the first 8 or 9 CDs on there.
That's really cool. And it was it a matter of you were recorded because he was such a fan of yours? Or did you ask him to? Or
no.
Oh my gosh!
I really didn't know that he had such a library of Slim Man songs. It wasn't until I asked him about it, you know, 2 years ago when I was listening to that stuff, and he sent me that huge stack of CDs. I was like, wow, this guy's been recording for a long time. And the crazy thing about it is that those are direct mixes. In other words, as we were doing the CD, putting the songs together, we couldn't turn up the voice or turn down the voice or turn up the bass or turn down the drums. Everything was as is. So in other words, what you're hearing there is an actual what they heard. We didn't do any overdubs. We didn't do anything but the live two-track mixes.
And you know what? That makes a difference. This has come up in discussion in the past couple of months because there is an artist who is locally based in Baltimore, D.C., and he actually had an event happening at Germano's in Little Italy.
Right.
And, you know, it makes all the difference in the world if you bring to the table and you know your way around recording and how it's going to sound, if you get that authenticity of live as is recording, it makes all the difference in the world. You can't bring a home recording and expect it to have any quality. If you know what you're doing in the recording studio, you do. But
yeah, that's true.
God bless him. Oh, my God. What is his name again, Slim?
Paul Doty, D-O-T-Y, Paul Doty and his wife, Leslie. And, you know, one of the other great things about it is that Paul and his wife are big fans. So they know the music. They know when the sax solo is coming up. They know the arrangements. They know what, you know, when the drummer's going to do his little break thing. So they were very familiar with every song. So they were able to mix it, anticipating what was coming up, which was just great for us. I mean, it wasn't like there was a strange guy behind the board. This guy was a fan, which was just helped out so very much because, you know, it was a labor of love for him. and he was very familiar with the material, so he was able to, you know, catch all the nuances of the live performance.
That is such a trip. You are so blessed in so many ways. You know what?
I know, and it was so crazy. Just listening to this stuff, it was just really exciting for me. And you learn a lot about, you know, what you do that's right, and you also learn, like, what not to do by listening to yourself sing for 12 hours over 10 years. And, you know, it was such an educational experience for me, you know, figuring out what works and what doesn't work, you know? Like when I'm playing and George, the piano player, does a great solo, I'll scream out, Giorgio! Well, I mean, you know, in the heat of the moment, it sounds great, but when, like, the engineer was listening to this as we were mastering it, he didn't quite get what I was talking about. So, you know, I'm like, okay, just let, you know, when the music's playing, just shut the heck up. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, I know not to do that.
Yeah, but that's just being you. I mean, that's... And there's a, look, there's a whole discussion about that, which I'll save for a little bit later in the show, about what you bring to the table. And in putting together this show and thinking about what would fit in the way of, oh, should I play this vocal? Should I not play this vocal? Honestly, I heard another guy who is one of these up-and-comers. Some people may be familiar with this man's work a whole lot more than me. He's one of those names in some circles in jazz where if you say his name, people go, oh. But honestly, Slim, I heard this man, and you two have very, very different styles, but you both bring to people's ears the same thing, which is that you allow this vulnerability to come into your voice, and it completely disarms people. You're welcome. You may not convey that in conversation, but that's okay. I know you well enough, and so do the people who love you. You have to keep it light. You have to keep it moving in conversation, and you save all that stuff for on stage. Woohoo! And you do.
That's true. That's true. I'm very observant of you there, Trish.
Well, hon, I'm nothing if not observant.
That's true. I mean, I save a lot of my emotions and, you know, that whole thing for when I'm playing and singing these songs. And, you know, that's the special place on stage when I get into that zone. And believe me, when I'm in that zone, when I'm playing live on stage, it's hard to describe. It's like I'm there, but I'm not there because I have so much to think about, playing the bass, doing the arrangements, remember the words, remember the melody, and, you know, picking out the next song. But on the other hand, I'm so involved in the song as it is happening. You know, it does require a certain amount of, emotion and letting yourself, you know, letting the song dictate, you know, what it is you want to convey. And, you know, because I wrote all the songs, it's easy for me to get into that, you know, to those sets of emotions, because they just, you know, they send triggers to me about, you know, what the song's about, you know, what exactly, you know, you're trying to convey emotionally.
Yeah. Well, and here's what it is. I understand this because I was a drama major in Philadelphia at Temple University, and I think I understand. You are an actor. You are. It's not that you're faking it. It's just that you know that you have a certain kind of role to play, and you allow that emotion to be released, because this is the perfect vehicle for you to let people know about a certain place and time that they can relate to because you're being so honest with your emotions?
Yeah, well, I think it's the exact opposite, Church.
Really?
Think the rest of the, I think the rest of the 22 hours a day, that's when I'm acting.
No, but... Seriously,
you are
real on stage. I love you on stage. Oh, my God, well, witness, you get sellouts all the time. Hey, Ram said Anchor will put you on Saturday night, not unless you bring an audience. They know you. So
it's
not like that. It's just that the best actors in the world are able to combine both the elements of them and also bring something forth that they wouldn't necessarily share in public. Here's a good example. Steve Carell was on it's a revamped show on CBS, the morning news, and he was talking to Gail. And you would not recognize Steve Carell in a one-to-one situation during an interview. He said, "I'm shy. I'm the guy who comes to the party and likes to overhear other people's conversations. I'm not necessarily social." He said, "I let it all out when the camera's rolling."
Right.
So it's not that he's being fake as an actor. He's one of the best actors we have. It's just that he knows how to channel all of that, and you know how to do that.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I think it's the other way around. It's like the other 22 hours a day I'm acting. When I'm on the stage, that's when I feel like the most real, the most grounded. I mean, just it's one of those crazy things. You get in this zone, and it's like time, it's like suspended or something. It's just you're like floating around, and it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling to be able to perform songs you love, songs that you've written, and I thank my lucky stars every day.
Well, there's a lot to feel blessed about with you, because it just seems like good things happen, and you really do have the ability to allow people to get away. You do. I'm real snobbish when it comes to that. When I see somebody perform, I'm looking at every nook and cranny of how they demonstrate who they are, and you really provide people an opportunity to go to some other place when you're on stage. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a good thing to be able to, you know, connect with people in that way.
Oh, yeah. And here's something, because I'm going to get into some music and let you take a break for a little bit, but when you were growing up, besides Louis Armstrong, because I know he was real big in your life and that was what kind of goaded you to go forward, who else were you listening to? Your mom was real big as far as introducing you and making sure you got to see some artists. Who were you listening to when you were little?
You know, when I was growing up, it was my mom and dad were really into jazz. There was also a lot of Italian opera around in the house. You know, there was a wide variety. My mom also, I mean, she could have been an A&R person at a major label. She just had this feeling for who was going to be hot, what was the next big thing. So not only was I listening to, you know, Miles Davis and Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and all those great artists, you know, Chet Baker's Nat King Cole. I was also, my mom would bring home, like, you know, the first Santana, everything, the first Beatles, the first Aretha on Atlantic. Throughout her whole life, she didn't drive, so there was a record store right up the street, right across from the Senator Theater in Baltimore, Maryland. Senator Theater is this old antique theater, and there was a record store right across, and the guy was, you know, one of those guys that just had his finger on the pulse, and she'd walk up to the record store and buy a couple of records and bring them home. And, you know, I think you ought to listen to this. And there you are listening to Aretha, her first album for Atlantic. And I was like, what is this? And, like, you know, like the first Santana album, like the first Hendrix album, and you're like, what? It was just, I mean, it's just so great. First of all, the 60s, without a doubt, the best decade for popular music.
Oh, please, honey. Oh, yes.
Even you think about what was happening with Motown, the Beatles, the Stones, Hendrix, Led Zeppelin.
And
around that time. And
also, You know, I remember the first album I ever got, the first vinyl, Child is Father to the Man, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was such a wide variety of really, really good music. And, you know, my mom was a part of that. She was, you know, had her finger on the pulse throughout her whole life as to what was coming in and who was going to be big. And she knew of Norah Jones before anybody knew about Norah Jones. She had the first Bonnie Raitt CD. And when Bonnie Raitt, you know, couldn't get arrested, I mean, she was going out dragging me out to Bonnie Raitt shows. And I'm like, who's Bonnie Raitt? You know, and nobody knew who she was. And she would just had this incredible musical intuition as to what was going to be big. And she just had, besides the classic stuff, classic pop and classic jazz, she just had her finger on the pulse of what was going on in the music business. And she would bring these albums home that had a huge, huge impact on me.
Oh, my gosh, that's really wonderful. And no wonder, you know, you've got this, I'll say it, this hybrid thing inside of you. It's like this stew, this hybrid stew, and you've got all these elements of what you used to listen to, and it's all come. I really do think, honestly, you're the freaking Dean Martin of Baltimore.
I'll have to put that in my bio.
You are. I mean, look, there are a handful of people that I say are international stars. I have said this from jump about you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
By the way, I
love Dean Martin, just for the record.
Well, you know, you always have this... And look, growing up in Philadelphia with my Italian brethren around me, I mean,
you
have this Italian vibe. South Philly is in my head and my soul. So that warmth and that accessibility and that grace that you have is always in what you do. You're able to send out these email blasts and endear people to you. You've just got this vibe besides that gilded throat of yours that is, you should be on TV. You should have your own show. It would be amazing.
All right, I'll do it. I'll be on TV. You be my co-host.
I'll do it. I'll be comic relief. Okay.
It'll be like Burns and Allen.
Right, that would be awesome, actually. It would. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Yeah, really.
That would be cool. Well, we're going to get involved in some music, and I just want to let folks know, because EC is so wonderful, and Slim, you got to get to know him. He is an amazing drummer and a writer. He's coming to, what is that called? HR 57 in Washington, D.C. tomorrow night, and a bunch of us are going to go. So EC is bringing some folks into D.C. that are pretty awesome, and I wanted to make sure I played a song. I'm going to play this. I'm going to go into one of the people that you have just mentioned as a person of interest in your upbringing.
Yes.
Okay.
I like that as a teaser, Trish. That's a good teaser. You're going to keep them tuned in on that one.
Okay, cool. Whatever it takes. This is E.C. Coleman, Waters of March, from Her Eyes at Sunset. Slim Man is my guest, and we're going to get to a song of Slim's in the next couple of songs. So stay with us on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights the stars. The dearest things I know are what you are. Divine, when all the things you are
from the Jerome Kern Songbook. That is Ella Fitzgerald on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, especially for my guest, Slim Man. Did you like that?
I love her. I love her so much. You know, one of my top all-time CDs, top three, is the CD that she did with Louis Armstrong and the Oscar Peterson Trio, and recorded by Norman Grant on Decca, I think it was. And that CD with her and Lewis is just the best stuff, with Oscar Peterson. And,
oh, yeah.
I think Louis Belson played drums on some, and Buddy Rich played drums on some others. Yeah, just a great, great CD. I love Ella. My mom, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money growing up, and my mom, you know, once got me a ticket to go see Ella Fitzgerald play with the Dr. Billy Taylor Trio. He played piano. And she could only afford one ticket, so she got me a ticket and put me on the bus, and I went down to the Lyric Theater in Baltimore, Maryland, and saw Ella Fitzgerald sing. It was just so wonderful.
And that's exactly why I played that song, because that story stuck when you were on the other radio station where I worked a few years ago. I always remembered that. I thought, oh, my God, because she told you, you have to go see her.
Yeah. Yeah, she went, you know, she made sure, you know, yeah, things like that she would do. And she would also, not only that, she would let me get on the bus and go down and see Hendrix on his first tour and Led Zeppelin on their first tour. And, you know, she just give me bus fare, and I go down and I buy a ticket, and I saw all these incredible bands the first time around when I was a kid. And a lot of it was because she was just like, go ahead. And I was, you know, 13, 14 years old and getting on the bus, the number 44, heading downtown. Downtown Palmer.
So this is really intriguing. your neighborhood was near the senator, and that's pretty much at the dividing line between City and Towson, right?
No, it's a little bit further north, but it's right there, Homeland, kind of Roland Park, that area.
So you're talking like Belvedere Square?
Yeah. Yeah, the slums of Roland Park, that's where we were.
Oh, not these days, but the senator, I don't know what they're doing, because that's a beautiful theater, and I'm not sure what's happening within the state with that theater, but across the street now, Slim, you know, there's still a record store there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not the same one probably that your mom and you remember, but yeah, that's a pretty interesting record store there, and all the folks who come into Belvedere Square, which is a pretty highbrow shopping center, go into that record store. They've got some quirky little things in there you have to visit while you're in town.
I will check it out.
Yeah. So how long are you in town, by the way?
You know, I'm going to get in tonight. I'm in the studio Friday. I'm working on a new Bonafide single, and then Saturday's the show. Sunday's a day off, and then Monday back in the studio, and I probably will come back. If I get everything done in the studio, I'll be back Tuesday, Wednesday, go back to Nashville. 5 days.
Yeah. So you like hanging out in Nashville. Having lived there twice, I completely understand. So what are your favorite things about Nashville so far?
The people are so friendly and so sweet, and everybody remembers your name, and they're so polite and so warm and welcoming and open, and it's just one of those towns you get a vibe from. You know, I was, you know, heading into a restaurant, and I forgot to lock my car. I'm like, no big deal. I mean, it's just kind of a safe, warm, and fuzzy place to live. I love it. I do. I love it. I love that it's so focused on music too. You can meet such a wide variety of artists, and it's not just all, you know, boots and hats. I mean, you got Jack White from the White Stripes is there. He started his label, Third Man Records, right there across from the artist store, artist supply store. And you got Black Keys that resettled there, and Kings of Leon just bought a whole bunch of houses over by the Minor League National Sounds Baseball Stadium, and
wow,
they set up a studio and a rehearsal space. You have Jeff the Brotherhood, and you have this incredible label Infinity Cat, which is doing a lot of crazy, like, punk alternative stuff. You know, 18-year-old kids, and they're doing vinyl, and it's a hip and happening little town, and I really enjoy it there. I got to tell you, I enjoy it.
Well, you don't necessarily have a love affair going on with the food there. You want to tell us about that?
Well, no, I mean, it's great. It's a great place to eat if you like fried mac and cheese. You know, it's, biscuits and gravy and, you know, grits and that kind of stuff. For Southern food, I mean, of course, it's great. But for, you know, restaurants, I mean, there are not a whole lot of places that are like must-go-to kinds of joints. I mean,
really?
There just aren't a whole lot of like, wow, you got to go to this place, which, you know, it'd be great to start a restaurant down there. Call it Slim's.
Oh, it would. And you should have never told me that it would be a cool idea to have a combination restaurant and radio station at the top of a tower somewhere in Nashville.
There you go. I mean, you know, to be able to do a combination of music and food and have it in the setting, I always thought it'd be great to be like an old firehouse or an old church or an old factory or warehouse, and to do a, you know, combination of food and music, small stage, grand piano, have everything wired for lights and sound and camera, and just flip the switch and do your radio show, do a TV show, do a cooking seminar, do a, you know, talk to an author or a writer, or just have it kind of be an open kind of thing where you would have a performance space and, you know, a nice little restaurant where you can go and get a decent, you know, $12 dish of pasta and a half a decent bottle of Chianti.
You know what? Honestly, that sounds like a great idea. And as you had mentioned this on the show a few months ago, And I was thinking, back in Philly, there was a pictorial in one of these magazines. It was the most awesome idea, and I thought about it in regard to you. One of these entrepreneurial types had decided to take an old silo located near the Philadelphia Museum of Art and turn it into offices and his own personal living space.
Perfect.
A silo.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I know.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. I mean, I've known people who have, you know, taken over alternative spaces to turn them into either businesses or residences. There's a lot of places in Nashville, like down by the National Sounds Baseball Stadium where Kings of Leon are. There's a whole bunch of old factories that are now being converted into, you know, shops and apartments and little restaurants and cafes and stuff. Yeah, I've always thought it'd be cool to have an alternative space, something that already existed, and turn it into something, you know, like a restaurant performance space.
And you need to have some place, if you were ever going to have a restaurant, where folks can take the elevator up and see a panorama of what's happening, because that goes well with the way you cook. It would just be such a great sophisticated experience for people, but still feel down home because your food is all about that. My God, I'm giving you plugs today, aren't I?
Well, I mean, you know, cooking and music, they're analogous. You know, they're very similar. You know, the way I cook is the way I like to create, and that's just, you know, three or four really simple, great quality ingredients, and just, you know, it's combine them in an interesting and, you know, intriguing way, and that's my philosophy for cooking and for music. I don't like a ton of stuff going on. I just like, you know, I always thought that the best records were records that were trios, you know, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, and Oscar Peterson trio. Led Zeppelin basically was a trio. The Beatles were a trio. If you got rid of George, you really didn't.
Oh!
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, Hendrix was a trio. The Doors were basically a trio. I mean, you think about it, a lot of the Nat King Cole trio is my favorite stuff of his. You know, I've always liked, you know, three or four really quality, simple ingredients put together in an interesting and intriguing way, and that's pretty much the way I like to do, you know, things that I cook, and that's the way I like to do it with the music that I make and produce.
That's something that you need to put a bookmark in, that thought, and hold that, because if you were going to pitch this idea to somebody whose building that you wanted to acquire, they might think that is a really fabulous concept, the analogy between food and music.
Yeah. It would be great to do it, like I said, in an alternative space, too. You know, it'd be just kind of cool. It'd be nice, you know, it'd be nice to have a cool little restaurant.
Oh, yeah. You know, the whole notion, and Nashville needs to get, well, actually the whole state of Tennessee needs to grasp this concept more, but the people who are pretty cosmopolitan in Nashville already get it. If you have a green space, if you have a recycled building, my God, that saves the environment so much. So that would be perfect for you. Perfect for you.
I know. You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. We've got all these wonderful buildings all across America, and rather than, you know, just chop down every tree and, you know, tear down every building and, you know, put up a big mall, you know, we should be thinking about, you know, using spaces that already exist, which is really kind of what I was thinking about with the restaurant.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it would be phenomenal. And you know, your menu could reflect that, because it's not that you want to do recycled mushrooms or anything, but you know, you could have your own garden, and the possibilities of what kind of help you could get for people who would be so intrigued with you, you know, putting down roots in Nashville. Oh my God, I'm getting high about the idea, and it ain't even my project, hon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also the other, you know, it's nice also to be able to just kind of pull up and move out when you have to, especially when you're in the mafia like I am. You know, somebody finds out where you are finally. They discover that you're in the witness protection program, and you have to all of a sudden put everything you have in a hefty trash can liner and get out of town in 20 minutes.
How well I know. What, you think Trish Hennessy is my real name?
Yeah.
I know about that. Let us turn our attention to something on Slim Man Live. I wanted to play at this particular juncture, If You Were Mine.
You know, that was a song from the very first Slim Man CD, and I really thought that that was going to be the first single off of that CD, and it's just one of those songs. It's just, I don't know, it's got a special place in my heart, and I really thought it was going to be the first single, but it wasn't the one that was chosen. It was Faith in Us, and If You Were Mine, I just love the vibe. I love the way it feels. I love what it says. Yeah, it was one of my favorites from that first CD, End of the Rainbow.
Well, the song just speaks to a whole lot of us these days. These posters on Facebook are becoming so popular. When you have a particular poster that resonates with people, there's a whole lot of people who like it. And somebody had posted, there was a picture of a little cartoon, a grown man, grown woman, and they're laughing together. And the poster says, if you find somebody who laughs at whatever you say, no matter how screwed up that is, that's your soulmate.
Yeah.
And so many people gravitated to that. And I thought about that in relationship to If You Were Mine. Because, Slim, there's a lot of people who are looking for, and especially later on in life, love, and it gets harder to find because of different circumstances, and people are afraid to reach out to one another, but you kind of say what some people would like to say.
You know, it's just, you know, the song really speaks for itself, but yeah, you know, it's, you know, If You Were Mine, it kind of says it all in the title, and yeah, it's got that vibe. It's got a certain kind of a longing, you know, like for that kind of connection that, you know, we all want.
Yep, that's right. And the longing, that's a good word for it. This is Slim Man from Slim Man Live, If You Were Mine, Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
I would take you on a trip around the world with only you and I. And if you were mine, we could soar above the clouds and touch all the stars and shine in the sky. If I had my way, I'd be with you every day. Cherish you like the sun. You will be my only one. If you were mine, it would be like paradise. And if you were mine, I would stare into your eyes. We'd lose all sense of time as you lay by my side. If you were mine, if you were mine, don't be afraid to take the time for love, 'cause these are the things that dreams are made of. Someone like you to hold through the night and to be there in the sweet morning light. of mine. I would shower you with love, and if you were mine, I would give you the moon above. We lose our sense of time as you lay by my side, if you were mine.
I'm
As Gomer Pyle used to say, surprise, surprise, surprise. Gotta play Slim Men's. At one time, Dream Girl, Sade, Soldier of Love, because it sounded so dadgum good after If You Were Mine from Slim Men Live. What'd you think?
Sade. me and my girl went to see her in Nashville back in August of last year. September, and it was, I'm telling you, it was one of the best shows I've seen. And keep in mind, I saw U2 on their first show in New York City, the first show Police. I saw Hendrix on his second tour backstage. I saw Led Zeppelin open up for The Who, the only time that's ever happened. And that Sade concert, that her last tour, was one of the best I have seen. She's just, I just love her. I love her voice. I love her vibe. I love her music. Her band was great. The staging was incredible. The lights, the whole thing, all wrapped up, was just amazing, beginning to end. And
wow.
She started off with that song, Soldier of Love.
Wow. And it's so cool. I just found this out recently, but as of May, that Bring Me Home Live video was number one in the country for a while. It still may be. So what you're saying now, it's no shock to hear that news. That's pretty amazing. You know what? You're not the first person to have said that.
What's the Bring Me Home video?
It's encapsulating all of the best points of the tour, I guess.
Of the last year's tour? Because I know that
yeah.
they were videotaping, and they had an elaborate videotaping session. And it was funny, John Legend opened up, and after he got done, they had these guys out on the floor of the stage sweeping and mopping and mopping and sweeping and getting everything all clean. I'm like, why are they sweeping the stage? And I figured it out because she comes out, she's barefoot, so I guess she don't want to be stepping on any duct tape, and, you know what I mean? Cigarette butts.
She comes out barefoot, huh?
Yeah.
She's really something.
She was great. I mean, I don't use that word too often, but she was great.
Well, I know, you know, for those of us who love her anyway, I know it's just icing on the cake to see her. Tom Joyner used to kill me because he would say that she just has a couple of moves, but those moves were so significant.
Yeah, she doesn't have 25 guys dancing on stage, and I like that. I like the fact that it doesn't all seem choreographed to death. You know, it's just,
yeah.
it seems to have a little bit of spontaneity. It's all real. It's all organic, and it's just a great show. Me and the girls just loved it, loved Sade, and she has the same birthday as Slim Ben.
I know that. And as a matter of fact, both of you have the same birthday as my late wonderful sister Jean. So I never forget you or Sade on that birthday, January the 16th.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I was born the same year as Sade.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
She's been my favorite for a long time. And that was the second time I saw her on tour. The first time I saw her, it was really good. I wouldn't call it great, but it was really good. And this time was just amazing. And one of the other amazing things is in Nashville, you know, I've got a couple of people who are pretty well connected, and it's kind of cool there in Nashville. You just make a phone call and say, hey, you think you can get Sade tickets? And they're like, yeah, I'll make a call. And they're like, okay, be at the box office at 6:15. And there you are sitting on the side of the stage. It's like, oh my God bless this town.
Oh, wow. Hey, for somebody to be well connected like that within a, you know, relatively short space of time considering, that's pretty awesome. No wonder you love the town.
Yeah, but, you know, I got to tell you that my friend that got me the tickets, he has been in the music business for a long time, and I've known him for a really long time. He moved to Nashville about 6 years ago. But it is a town that's accessible. It's a town where you can pick up the phone and get in touch with some pretty well-connected people. I'm doing a benefit for Bridges, which is a domestic violence organization. And I got in touch with Tim McGraw's manager and said, you know, can we get some autographs, something or other? She emailed me back, yeah, sure. Where do you want us to send it?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I like this.
Oh, yeah.
But that's one of those towns, you know. It's just great. It's really great.
I completely understand that because when I was living there and we did a benefit for Gilda's Club, it was awesome because at the time, and I'm not sure how many there are now, but Gilda Radner wanted a place where people who were experiencing cancer or their family members who were going through this hill and valley journey with their cancer loved ones could come and socialize, hash it out, get counseling, whatever. So Sandy Towers was the person who coordinated this effort. The radio station where I was working helped. And my God, Slim, within a short space in time, we had everybody and his mama, including Kevin Bacon and his brother Michael, come down to do a benefit concert.
Right. And yeah, it's that kind of a town. And Gilda's place is still down there right at the end of Music Row, at the beginning of Music Row, actually.
That's nice to hear. Thank you for letting me know that because I didn't know. Oh, that's such a wonderful place. So you're getting involved with this place called Bridges?
Yes, this is my second or third go-round raising money for this Bridges, which is, you know, to try and prevent victims of domestic violence, and then this is a big benefit for that organization. And Tim McGraw donated a bunch of stuff. I put together that people want a bid for me to cook dinner for them and do a little mini concert. That's people are going to bid on that. I think it's August the 25th down in Nashville.
Oh, awesome! Well, yeah. you make sure that if you have any link, put it on your page, and you know that folks will post it on their pages on Facebook.
I'm going to link it up.
That is very cool. And by the way, your cell phone is phenomenal. It sounds like a landline.
I was thinking the same thing. We've been talking for an hour and 40 minutes, and there hasn't been like one spot where I've dropped out.
No, that's like unheard of, because recently there's been a conversation where somebody didn't understand how awful his cell phone was, and it makes all the difference in the world. Here you are driving. And by the way, where are you now?
I am coming up on Bristol, Tennessee. It's where the racetrack is.
Yeah.
I'm 20 yep. miles from Bristol. Sounds like a good country song.
Yeah. And while we're on that subject, do you and Ronnie Dunn ever keep in touch?
You know, I saw him a couple of years ago. You know, I did that contest back in the late 80s where he was the winner of a national talent contest that we had put together. And
big contest.
He later went on. Yeah, it was big. And then he later went on, after he won the contest, to hook up with Kix Brooks and form Brooks and Dunn.
Yep.
I was in Fresno playing like a 85-seat little teeny jazz club. And I was jogging around the hotel in Fresno, and I saw all these huge trucks, you know, Brooks and Dunn. They had their own fleet of trucks, and I'm thinking, man.
Yeah.
So I'm walking to the hotel where I stayed, and Ronnie was walking out, and I said, Ronnie? And he's like, Slam. I was like, hey, man, that was a couple of years ago, but I haven't been in touch since.
Well, you know what? He might need you at this point, because Brooks and Dunn are no more. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of bites as far as folks wanting to see Kix Brooks by himself or Ronnie Dunn by himself. So you may want to hook up with Ronnie again, because he needs you.
Right. I know. It's not like when Sonny and Cher broke up. You know, everybody wanted to see Cher. Nobody wanted to see Sonny. Since Brooks and Dunn broke up, you know, like neither one of them have been really, you know, out there taking the world by storm. Although,
no.
Me and my girl, we go out to Kix Brooks has a winery called Arrington.
Really?
It's not a bad little winery, and they have jazz concerts, and we're trying to set up a show out there. But Kix Brooks has a winery in Nashville, outside of Nashville, in Arrington. It's called
Arrington. I did not know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what part of Tennessee is that? Because I'll know the town.
It's Arrington.
Arrington. Okay.
Arrington. It's Arrington Vineyards. It's a little bit south of Brentwood, you know, about maybe 30 miles out of Nashville.
Oh, okay. Well, Brentwood, I sure know. And actually, that whole territory, oh, my God, Slim, you need to hook up with Larry Carlton when he's in town. And you need to hook up with Vince Gill, because you and Vince Gill would be an unbelievable bond, because Vince has got half a foot in country, another little bit in bluegrass, and then a lot of interest in jazz. So
yeah. I played a golf, a charity golf benefit for that Bridges domestic violence place, and Vince Gill, and he was part of the. He's a great golfer. He played golf as well, and his wife was there, Amy Grant. Vince is great. Vince is great. Larry Carlton is great.
Yeah, Larry Carlton's going to play a really cool show. You might not know about this place in D.C. It's called the Hamilton. It's a hotel venue. And, wow, have some top-of-the-line folks come through. Larry Carlton's coming back from a European tour and playing there in early September.
Yeah, well, he's great. I mean, all the stuff that he did with Steely Dan and Joni Mitchell and all of his solo stuff, too, great guitar player.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you something, and it escapes me, and I'm going to write stuff down, but I want to get back to another track, and I want to save a couple of tracks till later on. But you know what song really hit me? I love it a lot. Is Starlight, Starbright.
You know, that was one. That was a song that I wrote, and it was on the second Slimette CD, Closer to Paradise, and it was a song that I wrote that Al Jarreau had on hold for the longest time. He never recorded it, so I decided to do it myself. And yeah, that was one of those songs on that album that I was one of my favorites. I was kind of surprised that it didn't get chosen, but you know. And Trish,
well,
I just want to let you know, I just went by a gun store that said, Jesus is Lord, we have guns.
No, it does not.
I was going to pull out my camera and send you a little photo, but yeah, Jesus is Lord, we have guns.
Oh, my
gun,
God.
A big, huge gun store at the side of Route 81.
Yeah.
Outside of Bristol.
In answer to that, I have my favorite bumper sticker to share, which says, Jesus is coming back, and boy, is he pissed.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Only in Tennessee. Well, there's a couple other states that would do that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. It is a beautiful state. I will give it that. You know, it's got just the kind of rolling hills, and it is really, really pretty down here.
Yeah.
Give it that.
Oh, listen, one of the great places to visit when we were living there, first time or second time around, I forget which, but I was living there in the 80s and then living there in the mid-90s. And if you go to visit that Jack Daniel's distillery in Lynchburg, oh!
Yeah, I've never been.
Oh! You know, you walk in and you smell that mash in these big barrels. But the only thing is, you can't get any Jack Daniels in the town because it's dry.
Yeah, I know.
Crazy.
Huh?
Oh, my God. Well, I want to play Starlight, Starbright, and it's funny that you should mention Al Jarreau, because he was one of those folks that I thought that I would play today, because it's funny, Slim, you and he remind me of each other.
You know, I like Al Jarreau. He's not one of my favorites, but I really enjoy his music. I've done Conscious with him. To listen to him warming up in the dressing room before a show is unbelievable, what he's doing back there. I didn't know whether to call 911 or to, you know, go in there and start CPR. It was just crazy, his vocal exercises, all these hoops and hollers and swoops and up and down, and I'm telling you, it was crazy. But he has an incredible voice. I will give him that. He is really, really great.
You know, I don't know if he ever intended to get it this far as his career, because he was full throttle into his social work in San Francisco area, at least Northern California. And he used to moonlight with George Duke after his studies and after his social work. They used to meet at the club, and they used to have this little trio. And, gosh, look at their careers blossoming since the 60s. It's pretty...
I love George Duke. I love George Duke.
I
mean, his Dookie Stick stuff, man, that was just so great. It was so fun and funny and light and great musicianship and great production. Yeah, I love George Duke.
Well, see, that's part of the reason why I was asking how long you were going to stay, because later on this month, George and Stanley Clark and Boney James are coming to Wolf Trap.
Wow.
Yeah. That's...
I'm a big George Duke fan.
Yeah, so am I.
Especially his early stuff.
Yeah? His early stuff?
Yeah, with that crazy girl singer he had. It was just great stuff. I loved all that stuff.
Well, he's got some really good stuff, and we're just, now that his wife has passed away, which is, oh my God, I know that a lot of us expected that, but I think that you'll see George go into a new period of writing music. It's going to be really interesting what he puts out now, and he's working with Jeffrey Osborne on Jeffrey's new CD, so that should be quite grand, quite.
Yeah, there's another great vocalist right there.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, look, I put you in the category of the great ones. I truly
thank
do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And folks
thank
will...
You, thank you.
They'll hear it here, because I was really digging the vibe from this song, from the new Slim Man Live. This is indeed Slim Man on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Sometimes we're not prepared for adversity. When it happens, sometimes we're caught short. We don't know exactly how to handle it. when it comes up. Sometimes we don't know just what to do when adversity takes over. And I have advice for all of us. I got it from our pianist, Joe Zawinul, who wrote this tune. And it sounds like what you're supposed to say when you have that kind of problem. It's called Mercy. Mercy. Mercy.
Now, you know, every every couple of months I have to play that song just because it's one of my favorite songs. I do love Cannonball Adderley so, so much. But I played it today for a specific reason, actually two. Yesterday, on the 8th, was the day that Cannonball Adderley passed away in 1975. And normally I like to celebrate the days that people are born, not the days they pass away. But it just struck me that, you know, here was this immense talent who helped so many other people and surrounded himself with really cool musicians. There was Victor Gaskin on bass and Roy McCurdy on drums, of course Nat Adderley on cornet, Joe Zawinul, who wrote the song, on piano, and Cannonball on saxophone. But Slim, I wanted to play that song because if you didn't know the story of that whole album, that the Mercy, Mercy, Mercy album, it says on the liner notes that the album was recorded at Club DeLisa in Chicago, which wasn't the case at all. It was recorded at Capitol's Hollywood Studios with an open bar for people.
That's the way to go.
Exactly. So Capitol wanted to make this a big splash. And, of course, it sounded like everybody was having a ball. And you're thinking, this club must be hotter than a pistol. But Cannonball wanted to do a favor for the owner of the club who had done favors for him. So he got the Club DeLisa on the album notes, and it wasn't the case. But nobody was ever the wiser until some time after it had come out. But, he had such a big heart, and he wanted to take care of his friends who took care of him as he was climbing that road to success.
Yep.
Man, isn't
Joe Zawinul, he went on to form one of my favorite bands, which was Weather Report. It was Heavy Weather Report is one of my favorite CDs.
Really?
Yeah, Joe Zawinul was the keyboard player and wrote a lot of the stuff for Weather Report. I think he was the founding member, one of them.
Well, I know that is so funny. Go ahead, I have something to tell you.
And of course, you know, a lot of people don't know this about Cannonball. He's the guy who invented that dive, you know, where you jump off the diving board and you grab your knees to your chest and you scream Cannonball.
It's
true.
No, it's not true.
Sounds funny, though.
It does. And so I don't know what came to my head, but, you know, I had planned to play Birdland by Weather Report for you today.
I love Birdland. I love that album. I love that song. And I love it also because they used to play it at the ballpark for the Baltimore Orioles, who are also known as the Birds, and they used to call their stadium Birdland. And
that's right.
Why they would play that song. Yeah, I love Joe Zawinul. I love Weather Report, and especially the stuff Heavy Weather, that album, the Heavy Weather, and Birdland is off of that CD.
I know. And how wild is it? We have never discussed Weather Report, and Joe.
No.
And I just got the ultimate Jaco Pastorius CD the other day, so I was grooving to that. And I was thinking of putting some stuff together, and I know that your songs on Slim Man Live are very romantic, and I wanted to strike a nice balance on the show today because it just seems like some songs are more cohesive to be played back-to-back with some songs. And I thought, Birdland, wow, that would be really groovy if we played that with such and such a tune. So good for you. Yay.
Yes, I love Weather Report.
Good to know that. And, didn't even think about Birdland with the Orioles. How about it?
Yeah, no, and how about the Orioles? I mean, God, they're in the wild card hunt. And who would think in August that we'd be talking about the Baltimore Orioles being possibly in the playoffs as a wild card team? It's just, and they've been playing great baseball. I was a fan as I was growing up. I grew up right down the street from the Memorial Stadium, so I was a big, huge Baltimore Orioles fan. I was a junior Oriole, collected all the cards, and I was used to go there by myself, sometimes with my brother. We'd, you know, ride a bike, take a bus, and we'd go down and watch the Orioles at Memorial Stadium. I'm a huge Orioles fan, and I'm so glad they're doing well.
Yeah, me too. And it's so weird. I mean, when was the last time this happened? Because people are still so buzzed about the Orioles, and now the Ravens are doing their training camp. So.
Right. Well, you know, think about it. Well, I'll tell you when the last time we had something to cheer about. It was 1997 was the last time that the Orioles had a winning season. So it's been a long time.
My God.
And the Ravens start their preseason tonight. It's the first game of the preseason for the Baltimore Ravens.
That's right. It is tonight. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's a
Baltimore kind of night.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you told me because I'm going to change out of these clothes and get something purple on. That's all there is to it.
I know. I love the Ravens, too.
I do, too. What they have done in a short period of time, I mean, you know, the nightmare for Baltimore was in the middle of the night, the Baltimore Colts stealing out of town. Oh, my God, that was so devastating to this city.
I know it was. I mean, you know, you're talking about, Baltimore's it's a working class city. It's a working man's town. It's got a great work ethic. You know, it's a shot in the beer town, and they loved their football. They still love their football. And when the Baltimore Colts left, it was just, that was, you know, one of our pride and joys. That was, the greatest game ever played in the 50s, and the incredible franchise. And the thing I never understood was why they took the name. Like when the Cleveland Browns came here to Baltimore, they changed their name, and the Cleveland Browns kept all their memorabilia and their name and their colors and all that. But when Baltimore left, they took the name, the colors, the logo, the statues, the championship, you know, trophies and all that. And it was just, I think that was, like, it just made it a lot worse when you took the game.
It was criminal. It was so sneaky and it was criminal. And you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, start fresh or something. You've already destroyed the emotions of people in town. But anyway, we'll be more positive. Look what's happening now. The Ravens are great, and the Orioles are great, and this town is on fire.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing what a sports franchise doing well will do to a city. And it's amazing what a sports franchise will do to a smaller market town, like when an Oklahoma City gets an NBA team, or when Nashville gets a National Football League team or National Hockey League team. It's just great for a town to have a major league team doing well. It's just hard to describe the people that aren't into sports, but when it's happening, it's just great stuff. You know, I was talking to Hitman Howie Z, my percussionist, and, you know, first thing on the phone, hey, how about them Birds? Yeah, how about them Ravens? Yeah, you know. And we haven't had that. We haven't had that Orioles discussion in a long time.
Oh, my God.
It's always been, you know, you can't, I'd still, when I go back to Baltimore, I'd still go to a stadium. And a lot of times, Trish, I'd go by myself because I couldn't find other people. They're like, I'm not going to see the Birds. They stink. It's been too long. They're crappy, you know. But I would go by myself. And now it's nice to see people just pumped up about the team. It's great to have a team like the Orioles that were so proud for so long fall into the abyss and then kind of start climbing out. And it looks like they're for real. Hopefully they can just keep it going for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and you know, that whole mentality about people who just feel the pop in everyday life when a team is doing well. You know, growing up in Philly, I understand that because we had the Eagles, we had the Phillies, we had the Flyers in Baltimore, we had the 76ers. So, you know, it gives people, honestly, I think this is the bottom line, it gives people a reason to want to get close to somebody because you can have a conversation breaker by talking about a team. You know, if things are going hot, you can just say, hey, how about them O's? How about those Phils?
Right, man. I agree. It's great to have those conversations when you have a major league team that's doing well. It just does great things for towns large and towns small. it's just a great thing. And you know, for people who aren't into sports, it's kind of hard to describe it. When your team's doing well, I don't know what it is. It's a great diversion. It's a great thing, like you said, for people to talk about. And you know, it's one of those things that kind of ignites and unites a town.
Yeah, it's really a very cool scenario. Baltimore is getting a second or third wind because of so much good stuff that's going on, and we've got the racing happening in the fall. You know, we're getting the bike races again, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think. Well, you know what? Hold that thought, because I'm probably getting ahead of myself. I'm not sure the bike races are coming back or the car races are coming back. But in any case, we had a situation happen a few weeks ago with the heat being so strong. It caused a water main break right around Pratt and Lombard, Slim.
Wow.
Yes. So it was a mess. And at the time, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake said, no problem. We're going to have it cleaned up by the fall so that the races can come in. So I think it's the car races, and I'm not sure of the title, and I know that Matt Williams, who's in the chat room, is going to tell me momentarily, because he's right on it. The chat room is alive and well, by the way,
They had the Formula One race there, I think it was last year, and that was really exciting. And I know that a lot of people in Europe were talking about that, because they follow the Formula One a lot more over there than we do over here. And it was great I was actually in Europe, and people were saying, hey, Formula One. And I was like, yeah, it's great. It's Baltimore. It's my town.
And,
so that
and
was
kind of
cool.
Yeah.
You know, it does add a certain energy to a town when you have something really cool and sporty and international going on in your hometown, and get a chance to see the city and stuff. It's cool.
And that's what it is, Formula One. And even though there were some money issues, I think that they're resolved. Somebody came to save the day, and the Formula One races will be back in Baltimore this year.
Well, that's great. That's great stuff.
Yeah. So,
but
listen.
Enough about sports. Let's talk about me for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me.
I'm just kidding.
No, I swear that was it. Who are the personnel on this CD? Because we got to get those names out there. This is your brethren we're talking about.
Mark Antoine plays nylon string guitar in four songs. George Hazelrig plays piano. Rick O'Rick, the original piano player, plays piano as well. Got Kevin Levi on the sax, as well as Rita T on sax, Johnny Cole on drums, and Mambo and his brother Enrique Hernandez on percussion. We had not one, but two percussionists at the same time on stage, the brothers Hernandez.
Oh, my gosh. That's really awesome. Well, you can just tell that every single track, I mean, oh, my God, was made with such love, and it's so fluid. Who finally did the ultimate mix? For example, and I love this because it's a pet peeve. Who was the ultimate catalyst for bringing the audience applause down to a nice fade?
Well, they did that when I was in the mastering world. They did that, but like I said, that was just a live two-track recording. In other words, we couldn't turn anything up or turn anything down. So we couldn't turn up the sax, turn down the sax, turn up the vocal, turn down the piano, turn up the audience, turn down the audience. But we did, at the end of each song, obviously we had to fade out after the audience applauded a little while. But all that's just, that's as it happened. There's no doctoring, there's no fixing, there's no nothing. It's just a straight two-track mix, and what you got is what you got. You can't turn anything up or turn anything down or fake it. That's all just real stuff. No overdubs. It's just,
Paul did, if that is the case, then Paul deserves to have a couple of slaps on the back for doing a good job, because, you just heard Cannonball Adderley with Mercy, Mercy, Mercy. And whoever put that final mix, I mean, the song sounds great, but at the end, the applause just ends cold.
Yeah.
And that's, it sounds so aggressive to your ears.
Right, I know. It was probably because the song was over and they were all rushing back to the bar.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Oh, my God. You can just tell. You can hear people go, that's right, cannonball.
Okay,
yes.
That's good. Now give me a drink.
It is really funny. Oh, my gosh. Well, you're probably in Bristol right now, Bristol, Virginia.
I'm past Bristol, hon. Past Bristol. I've been driving on 81. Yeah, I am coming up on Damascus.
Oh, wow. And, you know, I should know that because traveling back and forth from Philadelphia and then to Baltimore to Tennessee and back, you know, you sneeze and you're going to miss Bristol. There is a racing scenario there, but it doesn't mean it's a big town.
No, it's a racetrack, but that's about all that Bristol has that I know of. That, you know, people will come from, you know, miles around to go to that racetrack. But other than that, I mean, Bristol, I don't know much more that's going on in Bristol.
Yeah, well, apparently.
It isn't a bad drive. You know, Tennessee's a beautiful state. Virginia's a beautiful state. Maryland's a beautiful state. I mean, it's not like you're driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and in the middle of the, winter with snow blowing around. It's actually not a bad drive this time of year. It really isn't.
I know. And especially if you do those, country roads where you're going to see Jesus is Lord, we sell guns stores, Those mom and pops mean everything, don't they?
Yes, they do. God bless mom and pop.
God bless them. Well, we're going to play a couple of songs, and you can get your little second wind on 81. And when we come back, I want to delve a little bit more into your background. If folks don't know the roots of Slim Man, because that stuff is pretty fascinating.
Not really, but yeah, we can delve it.
It is fascinating because you had a couple of episodes of serendipity happen to you and
amazing
people
stuff.
You need to know that stuff because folks need to have hope that life can change on a dime, and that's happened to you a couple of times.
Yeah, it has, and the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of convinced that there is a benevolent force out there that is pointing you in the right direction. And sometimes a situation may seem kind of dark, but in retrospect, it was probably the best thing that ever happened. So, yeah, I agree with
you.
Yep,
absolutely. Well, we're going to play something from Weather Report. We're going to play Birdland, gosh darn it.
Perfect.
Yes. And Slim Man is riding shotgun, or I'm riding shotgun with Slim Man because he's behind the wheel.
If I were riding shotgun, we'd be having problems because Fatu would be driving the car.
Oh, my God.
My
at this
dog
point,
would be behind the wheel.
You know what? He can do it. I'm sure he can.
I'm sure he can.
Yep, Slim Man and Batu heading up the highway, and we're going to be hearing Weather Report and Birdland right here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
bothering you?
It doesn't bother me, honey, that a piece of roast beef can't fix up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Pop. A man works hard, then comes on home. Expects to find Sue with that fine ham bone. He opens the door, then starts to look in.
Say, woman, what's this stuff you cooking? Now that beef and no potatoes are just ain't right, they're like a green tomato.
Here I'm waiting, palpitating with all that meat.
And no potatoes.
All that meat and no potatoes. All that food to the alligators.
Now hold me steady, I'm really ready. Now all that meat and no potatoes.
I don't think that peas are bad. With me most anything goes.
Yes, I looked in the pot. I'm fit to fight. Cause, woman, you know that mess just ain't right.
Oh, that's all that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes.
Woman, I'm steaming, yeah, really screaming. All that meat and no potatoes.
For Slim Man with me today, Louis Armstrong and Velma Middleton, everybody. All that meat and no potatoes.
Yeah, what does that mean? I was thinking about it. All that meat, is that some kind of weird analogy for something else?
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, it was real subtle back in those days. Although
yeah.
I hear Velma wasn't sometimes, you know, I love to hear about her because she and Louie were real close, just a, you know, real close friendship. And for a heavyset woman, she used to do splits on stage. That must have been a trip to see.
Sure, you're telling me.
She was one of these lively personalities, and she didn't get credit a lot. She didn't even get credit on that particular record, but I guess some things were in Louis's hands and some things were not. But he and she loved each other, and I thought that song was such a kick, and I know that you love Louis, so thought I'd play a little something for you.
Yeah, he's my favorite. He's my favorite.
I know.
Such a humanity to his music, you know what I mean? You just, I don't know, you just feel, I don't know, it's one of those guys that you listen to, it just makes you feel good for some reason. Had a real joy to his music, too, a real joy.
And did you really, I mean, I know that because I love him, too, always have. Did you really feel that when you were a little guy?
Yeah.
I mean, here you were, 5 years old, and you loved it.
Yeah, I was, I mean, I used to do imitations of him, and I was just a big, huge fan. It hit me over the head when I was 5 years old, and I've been at it ever since, and I thank Louis Armstrong for that. I mean, trumpet was my first instrument for, you know, 9, 10 years.
And it was directly because you just were so inspired by Louis.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, so I have a poster of that movie, Five Pennies, framed. And I also have the movie, the actual DVD. My dad gave it to me a couple of years ago as a little present. So here's the movie that got you started. Yeah. Movie's good. Movie's good. Not great. Movie's good. But he is great in that movie. And Danny Kaye is good, too. Danny Kaye is
great.
Oh,
Danny Kaye is the bomb. I mean, I had a crush. A lot of girls did on Danny Kaye. And, you know, Louis Armstrong, not necessarily the kind of guy for girls to have crushes on.
No.
But, you know, because when you saw him on TV, I mean, we remember, Slim, he was on TV quite a bit when we were coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And when we would see him, whoa, he just appeared to be larger than life.
Yep.
Man.
What are you? Yeah. Both of them. Very unique personalities. Real strong. Just great stuff. Funny.
Yeah. Funny. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. The Danny Kaye Show was on for a while, and I know that Louis was on a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember him being on the Dean Martin Show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Louis Armstrong, yeah.
Oh, my God. Dean used to have such fun with the musicians on that show because, you know, they were just laid-back cats. And Dean, he pretended he was drunk. He wasn't drunk.
Oh, you know, I don't buy that.
No.
Because I've seen him a couple of times.
Really?
I mean, yeah, he was, I mean, you know. I don't know. And like when he was on the Dinah Shore show, you saw him and him talking. And there's, I mean, he was not sober. I mean, he had a kind of glassy eye, clowning around, and just Dean Martin was so funny. And you know, in all those TV shows Dean Martin did with Louis Armstrong and all those other people, they were not scripted. He would not rehearse. That's the one thing that I read a book, I keep it by my bedside, called Dino, and he wouldn't rehearse. He didn't rehearse. He said, you have my cue cards, I'm going to walk in, I'm going to do it. And he said, when you have my special guest enter through that door, I don't want to know who it is, just surprise me. So when he'd open that door, he didn't know who it was. He really didn't.
I love that.
Yeah, he was great.
My gosh, and you could do that too. You know what? The last time we really talked about this, there was some rumblings, and maybe you want to talk about this or maybe not, because, you know, folks, if they're going to come to see you at Ram's Head in Annapolis this Saturday for the big Slim Man CD release party, maybe they'll want to know and their appetite would be whetted as far as this information is concerned. Did you not talk to somebody about possibly doing a little pilot for a cooking show?
Yeah, well, I was. I've been working on my cooking show for a while. It got started a couple of years ago when the Italian American Network got really interested in a lot of the 5-minute cooking instructionals that I was doing, and they put a lot of them, about 40 of them, on the air. And I had been talking with them about doing a, you know, full-length half-hour or an hour show, which is a combination of music and cooking and, you know, comedy and drinking and, you know, all that stuff. And that, you know, that was the concept was that I was pitching was Dean Martin meets Emeril, which is kind of the way that I wanted to do the TV show. We've got some really strong interest. I can't say who it is, but yeah, it's I did a sizzle reel, which is a 2-3 minute best of Slim Man Cooks, and it's got a lot of interest, and we're still kicking it around. And come the first of the year, we should know something. But there's a new cable network that's showing a lot of interest in
good
in the concept. So yeah, hopefully it'll come to fruition. It'd be a lot of fun.
Well, actually, you should incorporate that old Dean Martin idea, you know, the secret door, and tell the producers, don't let me know who's coming through the door. I just want to know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It would.
Because, you know what, every time Dean did that, there was the element of surprise. You know, even if you thought he was drinking or whatever, he did convey surprise at who came through that door.
According to the interview with the producer, he didn't know. He did not know who was going to be coming through. But if you ever see that old Dean Martin show episodes, that's a real look of surprise. He didn't know whether it was going to be Frank Sinatra or Jimmy Durante or Goldie Hawn or Louis Armstrong or anybody. He just opened that door and there he was.
I think that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I really wish you a lot. I think that you're going to get a lot of success with this. I really do, because, look, who else is doing what you could do in the way of this whole concept that you have?
You know, I don't know anybody else that's doing it. I thought it'd be kind of cool to have a cooking show instead of the regular stand and stir show. To have a cooking show where you're cooking for a guest and you're talking as you're cooking about, you know, the everyday conversation you'd have if Chris Bode or, Sade walks through the door, you know, and as you're cooking, you have a crawl on the bottom of the screen which shows you exactly, you know, what you're doing and chopping this and a half a cup of that and, four cloves of this and... Rather than sit there and go chop an onion,
right.
To have a cooking show where you're just cooking and talking and having the actual recipe on the crawl. So that was my concept, and it's got a lot of interest lately. And we'll see what happens.
I love it. I really do, because you've got the personality for that, and you're so used to doing that because of all the YouTube vignettes that you've done for the past few years. If anybody doesn't know, you go to YouTube and you type in Slim Man, and you will see more than music. You will see Slim with Batu by his side cooking, and it's just like the old Shake and Bake commercials with Batu. I shake the bacon, and I helped.
That's right. I'm a little helper.
Well, go ahead.
I did about 40 plus episodes, little 5-minute things, and some of them are up on YouTube.
That's a lot, Slim.
Yeah.
My gosh. Man, I know that something cool is going to happen. Between you and Michel Fambro, who you might know or might not know, who spent a whole lot of time in Baltimore and now is in upstate New York and Rochester. We actually, the folks in the chat room, there's Matt, there's Griselda, there's BJ, there's Mama B, there's Fran Meadows, who's coming to the show on Saturday.
Beautiful.
And some guests. And we were talking about how you and Michel were so similar in that you are able, you're both Renaissance men. You are multi-gifted. And he also has some interest. Folks are looking at him to do a show of some kind as well. So one of these days, when you've got a little time to spend in Baltimore and he comes from upstate New York, it would be so cool to have a get-together where different people who need to know one another finally do meet.
Yeah, that's always a great thing, putting, like minds together.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Because, you just don't know. I mean, everybody's got to look out for each other. 2013 is coming, and we're seeing some hope as far as the economy is concerned. So let's grow more of that hope, by golly, and let's get some ideas on the table and make money from them.
Yes, yes, yes. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, cool. All right, I'm going to ask you a question about your background. I'm going to dive into another Slim Man track because I want to hear one or maybe two before the hour ends. What do you consider the big break? I know that you were talking to, at one point, you decided to spread your wings and fly. You were writing songs, and you had some songs under your belt. And you talked to a lady named Gordy who had Motown connections. Was that the big break?
Yeah, it was. I had a meeting with a publisher in New York back when I was a kid. And I went to the meeting, and it was just absolutely horrible. It just went really poorly. It was like a... Remember the cartoon character Pepe Le Pew?
Yes!
He was like a gay Pepe Le Pew, and I felt really uncomfortable there.
Oh, no!
Yeah, so I left that meeting, and I was went to meet my dad for what was supposed to be a victory lunch at the Cafe Britney, which was on 54th Street, and I couldn't even talk. I went out of the meeting. I went outside. I had my brand new suit on. It was raining like crazy in Manhattan, and I don't know if you've been in Manhattan when it's raining, but it's very difficult to find a cab, so I just walked over to the restaurant. I was soaked, completely soaked, and I went into... the restaurant. I couldn't say a word. I just sat there with my dad for a little while, and then he left, and I went out to a phone booth and got a Yellow Pages and called the first publisher that I knew of, which was Motown, one of my favorites. And I got a meeting with Roxana Gordy, who was Barry Gordy's niece, and she was playing one of my songs, and after a couple of minutes, a head popped through the door, and it was Carl Griffin, who was the head of the Motown Publishing Division in New York, and he liked what he heard, and he signed me a couple of weeks later to a songwriting contract with Motown, and a couple of weeks later, he asked me to write a song for a gal who was having a debut CD, and he said, I need a song, and I said, when? He said, like, tomorrow. So I wrote this song, and it got recorded, and 2 weeks later, he comes down to produce one of my songwriting sessions, and he brought the record down, and it was Angela Beaufil from her debut CD, Angie, a song that I wrote called Summer Days. Trish?
Uh-oh. Hello? Oh, boy. Well, here we are. See, we didn't have any problem whatsoever. There we go. Okay, it's dropped. The call's dropped. That's okay. You heard what Slim Man just said about Angie Beaufil. That song on her debut album, that's what I wanted him to get across. We were doing so well from Tennessee to Virginia, and we never had a call drop before, so that's okay. We'll just dive into a tune that we need to play. How about that? How about if we do this, because this is a short song, and I wanted to play this for Slim. Vince Guaraldi, Cast Your Fate to the Wind, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
Something in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weep. I could never live without your love. It's the kind of love I've been dreaming of. Every time I hear you speak my name, melts my heart. Just the thought of you and I see flames burning. Burning deep inside, there is no doubt. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. Every time you leave, you take a part of me. I can't stand the pain. When you're gone, the sunshine fades away, fades away. What to do, I couldn't do it now. Forgot to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. It's all about loving. I have a lot of faith in love.
Something in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weep. What to do, I couldn't do without. Got to tell you what it's all about.
Johnny Cole, Mambo Hernandez, ladies and gentlemen, Marc Antoine.
I love it. There you are. Oh, my gosh.
I'm glad
we had a chance. I know. That was the first time. That was pretty awesome for all that journey, Slim, and not having a call drop.
2 hours and 45 minutes. Well, actually, the cops were pulling me over. I had to... You know what I mean? Are you on Trish Hennessy's show right now? I'm like, yeah. Because I was listening to you. You sound pretty good. I just wanted to tell you.
No, first of all, they wouldn't be talking like that. They'd be like, hey, were you just on with Trish?
Yeah, that's right. I'm in Virginia.
That's right. What are you talking about? I am so glad we got a chance to play that song, Faith in Us.
Yeah.
You know, that's a favorite for many of us.
Yeah, and Marc Antoine, it was really great. He plays guitar on a lot of the songs on the CD. And it was great. The promoter out in California asked me, you know, said, if you could play with one person, who would it be? And I said, Marc. So he flew him over, and Marc did like five or six dates. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
That's really awesome, and I'm so tickled because I know this is going to do well. How will it work on Saturday at Ram's Head? You're going to have CDs for sale, correct?
Yeah, we'll have the new Slim Man Live CD. We have the new Slim Man and Batu T-shirts too.
Really?
And we're going to have George Hazelrig on piano. He's amazing. He plays on almost all the songs on the CD. Johnny Cole plays drums on every song on the CD. and Kevin Levi, the saxophone player that plays a lot on that Slim Man Live CD. And it's going to be the Fabulous Four back together once again. These guys have been playing with me for the last 10, 12 years, and we've developed quite a an intuitive feel on stage. You know, we get along. We kind of know who's going where with what, and it's great to be able to play with guys that know the songs so well and know such a wide variety of songs. You're able to, at least I'm able to, you know, call whatever song I feel should be played at that certain time. I'll have to go with a certain set list. So it's great to have the original guys back, you know, back playing with the band. So it's going to be really exciting for me to play with the guys once again. They're just a great bunch of guys, my best friends and some incredible musicians.
And don't be surprised who drops by in the way of musicians wanting to check the band out and certainly wanting to check you out because, you know, now you have found this, Slim. I know that you have. Now that you're not in town all the time, you get people gravitating to you because if you're not in Baltimore, that means you've hit it big.
Right.
So you're going to have folks that haven't seen you in a while that you didn't think were interested. Now they're going to be, it's going to be a sold-out house if it's not already.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always great to play the Ramstead. You know, it's not a bad seat in the house. And it's, you know, it's a great club. You know, it was ranked number one club under 500 seats in the world. And it's a great place to see a show. And not only that, you know, it's, Annapolis is a wonderful, wonderful town. One of my favorites. It's the hometown of my mom, the Slim Mom, and love Annapolis and I love the Ramstead. It's just one of my favorite places to play of all time.
Yeah, and if folks are coming for the first time, because you know the show will go into archive mode after it's done recording in a matter of like 5 minutes or so. Folks need to know that Annapolis is just absolutely chock full of wonderful places to eat, including the Ram's Head. You can get dinner there. You can you know, have the old-fashioned, leisurely way of listening to one of your favorites, Mr. Slim Manicotti, on stage, and you can partake of some very interesting and actually delightful cuisine there.
Yeah, they've got a good restaurant there. They've got a good, you know, whoever's doing the food back there is doing a good job. It's got good food. It's got a nice wine list. It's one of those clubs where they frown upon you talking, so that's a good thing for the musicians because, you know, it kind of keeps the conversation down to a minimum. But on the other hand, it's a great place to see a show, and if you're really interested in watching someone perform and actually hearing the music without, you know, hearing a lot of chit-chat, it's a great place to go see a show. And like you said, the food's great. It's got a great wine list. Good stuff all the way around.
And actually, looking at the audience for a Slim Man show, particularly at Ram's Head, I can tell you this. There is really not going to be a lot of sound anyway, a lot of extra chatter, because the women who come to the club to see Slim Man are either very attentive to Slim, hanging on to his every note, and trying very hard at the same time to assure their husbands that they're still interested in them.
Right. Yeah.
Because these women are riveted to you, as you know.
It's amazing what a couple of glasses of wine will do to you. You know what I'm saying?
No, that is not the case, because you truly are the poster man for Gentleman's Quarterly. You are. you are
maybe Mad Magazine or something.
No, not at all. You belong on that stage, and it's a pleasure to see you. And there will be a contingent of us who will be seeing you Saturday night, hon.
Well, that'd be great, Trish. You know, I love you. You're so great at what you do. I love talking with you.
I love talking to you.
And you know, we talk off the air too.
Yes.
You know, we talk a lot. People don't know that, but we're in regular contact, and we are good friends.
Well, I treasure that, and that last conversation. We need to have a continuation of that last conversation.
Yeah, really.
Oh, It's always wonderful to talk about the state of the world and about relationships and how they're in a state of flux these days, you know?
You know, it's a very complicated and complex set of emotions when you get involved with a relationship with another human being. And it's one of those things. I think people really took it for granted back in the day because they just kind of stuck together because that's what you did. And I admire people like, you know, my brother who's been married for 30 years and, you know, my cousin who's been married for 30 years. And it's just, those kinds of relationships are amazing, but, you know, they're not the normal thing these days. I mean, so many people, you know, it's tough to keep a relationship exciting and, you know, to get the balance and the understanding and the passion and the trust and all the things that you really need. It's not easy and it's not simple and it's complicated and complex and
you know
most of my songs are based on that complicated and complex set of emotions that are all tied to, you know, love and to relationships, not only with, you know, interpersonal romantic relationships, but also the relationship to you and your loved ones, your family, your friends, you know, your girlfriend or your, you know, to the world. I mean, it's a complicated and complex thing, but, you know, on the other hand, it's the most rewarding thing you'll ever feel, you know. It's just when you feel that love, it's just amazing and one of the most wonderful things in the world. It's the reason why we're all here, because somebody loves somebody, and all of a sudden here we are, you know.
You're absolutely right, and you have to be honest with yourself. You have to be painfully cognitive of what happened to you when you were little and get rid of all that stuff. You know, you have to be a grown-up when you enter into a relationship, and you have to know that everybody falls short. God's the only person who doesn't fall short, so you can't expect that person to be everything that you ever thought and not be disappointed. And if you know that, you're going to be healthy about it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's why we need to continue this conversation. And perhaps we will a little bit on Saturday. You're going to have a packed house, Ram's Head. Showtime is 8 o'clock, Slim, right?
8 o'clock, Ram's Head Tavern, Annapolis, Maryland. We're going to have a blast.
We are, and Slim Man Live is doing so well, and it's just going to be reaching your ears if you haven't heard it already, and it's going to make such a difference in your day-to-day healing as you try to navigate your way around the world. Woohoo! Be careful driving.
Oh, I didn't expect that. I will, Trish.
If I can
just get Batu to stop passing gas in the back, I think I'll be okay.
Oh my God! Thank you, for that visual. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad drive. It really isn't, you know. And it's been made all the more enjoyable talking to you. I'm telling you, it's been one of the best 3 hours I've ever spent behind the wheel. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Well, we'll see you on Saturday, and thank you for your time, babe.
All right, my dear. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
And thank you to everybody. Our time is getting to be short. 10 seconds. Thank you to everybody who showed up in the chat room. And we'll see you on Tuesday with Gail Johnson on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.